Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, then listen closely to the next 30 minutes. For healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Merry Christmas to you all. Today, we're going to look at Santa's checklist. Yes, Santa has a checklist because he wants to know if you've been naughty or nice to yourself in terms of your health. So, adapting to the theme of this show, today we're going to get into concepts. As you know, my regular audience, my show's about concepts. And the concept is that without the concepts, you get lost in all the trivia. It's my strong opinion against 20 years that there's too much rhetoric. There's too many little details. And when you're not feeling well, when you're chronically ill, when you're dealing with chronic symptom, disease, it's so easy to get lost in the little things. That's misdirection. That's right. You're never going to stop hearing me talk about this because it's all I see people do. Get lost in the little details about their illness, and all the things that really count are right there waving at them. But that's what doesn't get the attention. So my solution and where I see result is when people get the concepts. So for the next two shows, in that it's that appropriate time of year, we're going to talk about concepts. Concepts over 5 years of radio. Concepts that mean something that, practically speaking, should mean you simply have a checklist. A health checklist. And you just go down the checklist, as I mentioned, and explore the concepts with you. And see how much of this you've attached to. Again, I'm using a very specific term here. I'm saying how much you've attached to. Attachment. Attachment is very contrary to what we call acquisition of knowledge today. See, we're a bean counterculture. We're computer literate, but that doesn't mean we're literate because it doesn't mean we can think outside the box. And of course, that's a whole other topic, right? But what you find predominantly in medicine today on all levels is the small bean counter. The guy with the facts. It's even in your language. It's in your everyday language. You say to me sometimes, you know, I've done research. You know, I went on the internet. I had a guy do this the other day in a restaurant. His wife was having health problems. And he says, you know, I have a brain. I do my internet research. You know, poor guy doesn't understand how failing internet research actually is. It's the place you start, but collecting articles on internet over a topic so you can get some insight into it really isn't what it's about. It's an okay place to start. I don't want to knock anyone that does that. Of course, we all do that. But when you really get down to what makes the difference in the trenches, when you have to make choices, that's a product of thought, which is not just a compilation of papers conceived out of the internet. And the internet is very inviting. It's very slick. It's very speedy, right? And when you're typing there and clicking away on the internet, it feels like you're just absorbing knowledge at the speed of light because the pictures change so fast and you're taking it all in. And yet that is a complete and total delusion. So when I say how deeply you attach to these concepts, slow down and let the concept absorb you. This is the way you have to think. All right, show 344. Santa's health checklist. Have you been naughty or nice to yourself? Let's begin. Where do we begin? First concept, so important. Picture number one, if you're on the website, straighttalk.cc, not .com, that's with two T's, please observe picture number one and two. If you're driving and can't, when you can, get to my website. All roads lead to the website. And why is that? The website has pictures. Pictures speak a thousand words. You visual learners, get to the website. Picture number one, a book by Ethel Hume. Came out, I think, in the 20s. Ethel Hume, H-U-M-E. The title of the book was Beauchamp or Pasteur, a lost chapter in the history of biology. I backed that up with a second book by Nancy Appleton. It's not really a book, but it's a commentary, an intelligent commentary. Rethinking Pasteur's Germ Theory. Is it the microbe or is it the terrain? No, how deeply do you attach to that? I think it's at face value, you've got a sense that it's the environment, it's the terrain, it's the things you have to do for your health so that the environment that the microbe is in or the cancer cell is in or the wild maverick immune system cell eating your own tissue is, those autoimmune sorts of problems. I think you understand that, yes, it's not about that. It's about your environment. But I want you to consider how deeply or not you attach to this comment. It's a concept. Functionally, it has many, many implications. Functionally, it means when you kick back and you say, well, this is what I've done and I want to do more. What can I do more for my parasite? Had a guy a couple of weeks ago. Same deal. Been infected with parasites for years. Still looking for that new herb that's going to knock that parasite out. That parasite is in a biofilm. That parasite is dancing with viruses and bacteria. That parasite is doing things even the microbiologists don't understand. And we're looking for a different herb for it, you see? Functionally, there's no understanding of the terrain when one is thinking that way, functionally. And yet intellectually, yes, it's very easy to nod your head and say, yes, I understand that it's not Pasteur's germ theory, that Beauchamp and his notions of terrain. By the way, Beauchamp was, if you don't know, a scientist that reigned at the same time as Pasteur. Same credentials, better credentials, more famous on certain levels. It's just that his solutions couldn't be picked up by the Rockefellers of New York City, turned into an institute and divvied out in forms of vaccines. But way back, 1870, 1880, these years, there was much consensus in high-end microbial infectious disease thought, from Bernard to Virchow to Beauchamp. And the thought was, why try to kill the bug? Don't kill the microbe, change the terrain, and let the immune system kill the microbe. Who knows where we're going now in the lauded day of genetic engineering and what we're dealing with? Who knows? But the point is, traditionally, classically, and certainly relevant today, is that you shouldn't be sitting there, if you've been chronically infected, looking for the next doctor, the next biologist, the next drug, the next what herb, whatever, to fix your chronic infection that you're certain you have. You shouldn't do that. Merry Christmas to you and Happy New Year. This New Year's resolution is going to simply be, you're not going to do that with your infectious concern. You're going to do what? You're going to constantly ask yourself, how much of Santa's checklist have I absorbed? Meaning, how much have I done for my health? And what is there on the checklist I could do more of? That's what it comes down to. Later, we're going to talk about epigenetics epigenetics. Another big concept, a coming concept, a concept I think that predominantly is going to be buried by the money behind genetic engineering, cloning, recombinant DNA, buried underneath the fact that, yes, standard genetics is going to produce miracles, but at the expense of epigenetics, I kid you not. So be part of the informed public. Get rid of this notion that you have to kill the microbe. Or I should say, respect that it's secondary to the terrain. See, usually a dual approach in reality becomes best. But once you're in the chronic disease state, meaning you've done the antibiotics, you've done the herbal programs, you've done lots of things and you haven't seen it happen, and it's 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, you got to think terrain. All right, we'll come back to that later. Food, your food choices, the great debates about food. Maybe they exist because people need to debate. We need to debate politics. Republicans want to kill Democrats, and Democrats want to kill Republicans. Have we not seen a finer example of that in American history? I mean, since the Civil War, I think, in this last election. Groups out to murder each other. Well, two opposing sides. Why can't we come to an understanding, a functional understanding, meaning an understanding that changes the way we make our choices, that both sides have something to say? And this is the same argument posed with the food stuff. Vegan, vegetarian, fruitarian, paleo, primal, ketogenic, this, that, the other thing. I've done shows, you know, on how the dogma behind this is nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. Do you know, can you accept the fact that possibly you, yes, you, could train yourself to begin to intuit the food you're supposed to eat in the quantity, in the preparation, and in the subset of food each and every day? And that that might change. Change with respect to things we don't know or understand. Yes, the time, your constitution, your blood type, your this, your that. And it's not the point. That the intuitive faculties are so refined, if you respect them as such, that you're going to eat from the soul of you. Right? Soul power. A soulular intelligence. Something within the soul that's no different than within the cell, that teaches you how to guide yourself to your food choices as you experiment with the various ways of eating. If this were understood, why should there be so much dogma? Because it's not understood. But you at least understand. Understand, and then it's a matter of understanding this. Understand that unless your palate is cleaned, the palate has to be clean for you to make a food choice. That means if it's sufficiently destroyed by sugar, rancid fats, toxic foods, chemicals, all sorts of things. The bad stuff. You can't give a piece of fruit. Think of you at the worst phase of your life in terms of health. Think of you during that worst season of your health, whenever that was. How poor your diet was. Somebody gives you a ripe piece of fruit, a ripe piece of fruit from the garden, when you had coffee, cigarettes, and donuts for breakfast, and that ripe piece of fruit has no meaning. Do you realize this is the way most people live? I'll put it to you this way. Not that many of you are like this, but go into Denny's. Go into any one of your fast food places. Go into any one of your lower end restaurants. I mean the family things, the family chain kind of restaurants. Go into any diner. Go into any place where people obviously eat 2 out of 3 meals a day in cheap restaurants because they don't have to cook because it's fast and easy. And the food's not half bad in a sense. I mean, it's not as bad as Taco Bell. But it's still garbage food. You can't eat intuitively when you live like that. It's impossible. If you ask a person within the first, say, 3 or 4 days of an intuitive food shift, it doesn't matter what it's to. It could be veganism, vegetarianism. It could be ketogenic. And you ask a person like that, eating like that, to shift, they're going to tell you that the food you suggested tastes like garbage. And the reason is their taste buds are dead. They've been desensitized, polluted, twisted upside down. Addictive metabolisms based on the foods in these foods, the chemicals in these foods that addict you to them, will not allow you to enjoy a ripe vegetable. You know, there was a guy, he was 92. I think he owned the Crab Cooker. Oh, I might be off of the memory. Out here, down here in Newport Beach. He just passed away. I read about it the other day. Nice guy. Old school. Quotes everywhere like, you know, people aren't stupid. Give them quality, they'll come back. You know, the old school when you had real integrity behind what you did. I can't remember his name. It's the Crab Cooker or the Crab Shack. You'll read about it if you just look it up. At any rate, this gentleman, God bless him, aside from saying the public's not stupid, people are not stupid, meaning don't lie to the public. They're going to figure you out. Also said, and this is my point, also said that the way you eat food is plain. Plain. The way you eat fish. He was a fisherman. Fish is for a little bit of lemon. And then if you have to start using these exotic sauces and so on and so forth, it's because the fish is not fresh. The fish is not good. No doubt this is a man who scoffed at farmed fish. No doubt. And that's my point. If you're going to ask Harry, the cab driver, living on cigarettes, Winchell's, and whatnot, and McDonald's, to go to a ketogenic, paleo, vegetarian, vegan-type existence, his taste buds are so polluted that the taste from high-quality food will never reach his palate. On top of which, if you trend, now you got to catch this. This is important. When you transition people to health food, if it's garbage health food, they're never going to do it. Because garbage health food doesn't have taste. So get somebody off processed fast food animal protein. Get them off fast food chicken, fast food fish. You know, I'll have the fish taco. Get them off that kind of food and transition them to fillets of salmon. But instead of giving them wild salmon, instead of giving them real food, give them the garbage farm stuff. And they'll throw it out in your face and says, this doesn't taste like anything. It doesn't taste good. And I'm not doing it. And they're correct. And you see, that's the subtlety. If you're talking about intuitive eating, if you would attach to one concept this year that'll do something for you, it's to clean the palate and make your food choices exquisite. That means the farmers markets. That means the food co-ops. That means buying your food from a farm that you have a farm share on. 3 things I said. That means growing your own food, perhaps. Some of your food comes from a backyard or a neighbor. If you were to do one thing for this next year, if you would have done one thing from 2017, and it could have been to shift your food sources to exquisite levels, you'd be way ahead. Just that one thing. So if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about your symptom, if you're living in some fog that there's somebody out there that's going to deliver a very specific protocol for your very specific problem that you haven't benefited from yet, thus you keep looking, please think differently. Think about those concepts that you kind of thought you knew, but kind of don't, because you haven't attached more deeply, you see? Deep attachment. Yes, I'm repeating myself. Tough. The whole culture is going against that. The whole culture is asking you to create a quantity of data, not a quality of information. The whole culture is asking you to absorb lots of nonsense instead of getting one thing right. You need to really remember this. Change the terrain. Connect to your intuitive faculty. I have to now, because it's so vital, because it's so overlooked, say something about sleep. How often do you talk to people and they tell you they sleep great, and then you find out they're up 3 times a night urinating? But of course, that doesn't mean anything, because they fall right back to sleep. These kinds of people scare me. Because if they were half connected to their existence, they would come in and say, I get up 3 times a night, and that's why I'm exhausted. But I don't hear that. Do you think it's possible that a lot of people are living the kind of life where they don't even feel their exhaustion? Do you think it's possible that a lot of people up to a certain point are living their life in such a way that they're in post-traumatic stress syndromes? And that really asking them to feel their fatigue is the equivalent of asking them to feel their fatigue the day of an earthquake? If you've ever been in an earthquake, no one in an earthquake is standing there while the earth is shaking, the walls are coming down, the furniture is shifting from one side of the room to the other. No one's thinking about their knee pain or that they're fatigued or they have to go to the doctor. No, you're running for your life. Do you suppose that a lot of people live like they're running for their life all the time? Well, let me tell you, it's reality for a lot more people than you know. So if you're like that, what is sleep then? Sleep is just some interference to what otherwise will be the continuation of running for your life. There are many people that don't feel their fatigue because they're in shock. And then there are many people who are not sleeping. You would be amazed how I wish I could give you these experiences. Well, for some of you, I have in your own personal life. But what I mean is how I wish there would be a way to coordinate some sort of media to have you, the public, watch a person going from shock to that phase where they begin to sleep to that phase where they say, "What did you do, doctor? I came to you functional, and now I can't get up in the morning. It's like all I want to do is sleep all day. It's like I could sleep for 20 years. I could be Rip Van Winkle. Yes, I could. Doctor, what did you do to take all my energy away?" That's what they say. They're so stressed. They live so deeply in shock that when their body, finally on the right track, start sending them messages, imploring them, beseeching them to respect the fact that they need to rest, they turn around and they say, "I'm so tired now. I wish I could put that to a media form." There are so many examples like that. There are so many examples of how people fight their healing. They don't know how to be nice to themselves. They can't listen to their bodies. The quality once imbued when sperm meets egg is lost ultimately. Sleep needs to be deep. Deep. Sleep breaks itself down. Sleep breaks itself down into multiple cycles. First hour or two are light. You know, that's when you're falling asleep. Then you go out like a light bulb. Then it's deep. A lot of people get that one. Oh, I went to bed at 11. From 11 to 2, it was just like, that was a dead sleep. I was dead. Then I was up from 2 to 5. Then I was tossing and turning. And then I had to get up. So I slept about, 5 hours, but it was choppy. Or they sleep 3 hours deep and then they're up to urinate. People have lots of varieties of this. But what's supposed to happen, the sleep that you can heal with, the sleep you want to cultivate. How do I see you? I see you as terrain or infection. How do I see you? I see you on a scale of, do you know the intuitive messages from your body? How do I see you? I see you on the level of your sleep. How do I assess you? How do I determine if you're going to heal? I don't care if your lab results are worse. I care that you're sleeping more deeply. I don't care that your disease has progressed. I care that you're eating more intuitively. I don't care that your microbe is more active. I care that you're understanding it's the terrain that will heal you if it changes. I look at you differently than you might look at you. Thus the show. For 2018, can you please look at you like I look at you? Can you get out of these dreadful habits? I mean the dreadful habit of looking at your health the wrong way. We're looking for quick fix answers. We're looking for new herbs. We're looking for new injections. We're looking for new drugs. We're looking for new surgical techniques. We're looking for all these things, but we're not looking for a healthier perspective on how to navigate your health. Well, Merry Christmas to you too. I think I've given you the keys to the kingdom. You may be sitting smiling. You may be amused. You may be pretending you understand. You may be really understanding. I know some of you really understand. Those of you on the website regularly, expect an email fairly soon. I'm going to take the top 50 people. I have a lot of people who spend hours each week on the website. Percentage are doctors, a percentage are the interested public, but nonetheless, I have groups that spend a lot of time. I'm going to bring you all together in packets of 20. Because if you're spending 3, 4, 5 hours a week on this website, bravo. We can do better than that. We really can. So I'm going to take a shot at it. You know, I used to teach classes. I used to teach 3 different classes. I taught a class of 20 every other week for about 4 years. And it was very good, but, you know, things have to evolve. I'd like to evolve to the people that are really on that site, studying, looking at the pictures, mulling it over. Many of you are actually actively involved in the cleansing processes yourself. You're bootlegging it, but you're going for it. I think that's remarkable. It's the primary reason I designed this show and the schools that I have had intermittently. I think the process needs to be improved. I think it costs too much. I think it's too discordant. I think it's non-conceptual. Concept. Go to bed and wake up 7 to 8 hours later. Go through the stages of sleep, deep, and then REM. REM is when you dream, the last 2-3 hours of dreaming, dream and dream and dream. And then finally you open your eyes like, I got to get out of bed. I'm sick of staying in bed. That's the day you've got your full canister of adrenaline. That's the day you filled up your cup once again. Terrain, intuition, sleep. Let's continue with Santa's checklist. DNA. This is going to be a big one for you if you listen to this show. It's going to be a big one for me for a long time. The name is Claude Swanson. Go on Google, go on YouTube, look up the name Claude Swanson. Carmen Boulter. Carmen Boulter, B-O-U-L-T-E-R, the pyramid code. Go to episode 4 on human empowerment. If you're driving, go home, get on the computer, look at episode 4, Carmen Boulter, the pyramid code. Genius work, genius level work. Listen to Hakim, the keeper of the Sphinx. The linguist translating out of Kemet, ancient Egyptian. That's pre-dynastic Egypt and the wisdom from that culture and translating out of it. His name is Hakim. Listen to him talk, and then also catch the phase there by a guy named Claude Swanson. Claude Swanson, S-W-A-N-S-O-N, is a physicist out of MIT and a few other places. He's done work on DNA and its ability to absorb photons, packets of light. Get that name down. I tried to put a YouTube clip on with Claude talking today. I failed to do that. You have enough. Look at Time Magazine. Look at the picture there. Picture number 8, why DNA is not your destiny. Look at Nessa Carey, another molecular biologist, the epigenetics revolution, Nessa Carey. Junk DNA, Nessa Carey. DNA is not your destiny, by Stephen Hein. You're going to have to get these relationships down, my friends. Truly. Because there's a message coming from the genetic think tanks above, straight to the pharmaceutical industries, straight to the medical doctors, and straight to you. And that is, once the gene expresses, you're dead. There are so many examples of serious disease brought about by the expression of genes you don't want to express. When I say gene expression, I mean something turns the gene on so that the gene, the sequence of nucleotides, starts giving commands to the messenger RNA that the messenger RNA acknowledges, that transfers to the RNA, that goes to the ribosome, that makes the protein, that now is your death warrant. When the wrong genes express, you're in a lot of trouble. And what you're going to be told continually, relentlessly, and to some extent, correctly so. If you've got breast cancer and it's estrogen receptive and you're given tamoxifen, if that cancer metastasizes, they're going to assay the metastatic cancer cells and they're going to find that they might be now mutated in the ESR1 gene, and different little segments within that gene now have mutated, and you're no longer going to respond correctly to the estrogen blocking drugs, to the tamoxifens et al. That's bad. And because now a gene is mutated and you're over your head in trouble, you're going to be told you're in deep trouble. But the implication is we don't have drugs to fix it. There's nothing you can do. This is not true. It is not true. It is not true. It is not true. Just as the ESR1 gene mutates in some, but not in others, is a matter of things that you may well be able to control. I didn't put the study on today. I did not put the study on today. But there's a great article on the epigenetics, meaning the options you have when this breast cancer gene mutates and causes you a terminally pressing situation. There's an article on how you might be able to control that. It's an article out of the Hard Science. It's going to be undisputed that there are epigenetic forces controlling the expression of this deleterious gene, this ESR1 gene that we all have that's mutated in these people that no longer respond to the estrogen drugs, tamoxifen, say. And what do these geniuses conclude? They conclude that obesity is an epigenetic factor. So what they're saying potentially then is that if you have breast cancer and it was estrogen receptive and you took tamoxifen, which blocks the action of the estrogen in the nucleus of the cancer cell and other cells, but that if you're one of those people, but you mutate, but your metastasized cancer cells, say in your liver, have mutated, they've mutated the ESR1 estrogen gene, and now your drug will not work, and thus you're in a great deal of trouble. This article is saying that one of the mutagenic factors may be obesity. You're going to pay money? You're going to pay good money to conduct a long-term experiment to conclude that? Are you following me? Epigenetics is going to ultimately come down to health. As necessary as the rest of them study epigenetics, they're going to study health. Epigenetics is health. But you can't tell that to a molecular biologist studying the relationship between the expression of the ESR1 mutated gene and obesity. You can't say that. We're going to have to wait another 50 or 100 years before we can list the epigenetic factors. And you do not have time to wait. You have to use your common sense. You have to know health to silence a gene that's in unfortunate expression. You have to use health. But people don't know what health is. You have to change the rate at which the DNA absorbs the photons. You have to change the absorption levels. You have to change the amount of photonic energy. What do you think Christ did? What do you think a miracle is? Can't we suppose on his birthday coming in 2 days that our Lord was born with some inherent capacity to generate a magnetic field? And that if you were close enough to the state required, you could absorb his field. His magnetic field was yours. It was his gift to you. Thus the miracles. He was a man named Jesus. You know, National Geographic has this article out. I don't know if they're satanic at the root of that magazine. But, you know, you've heard it before that Jesus is a myth and that lots of people think he didn't exist and this, that, and the other thing. I really wonder about National Geographic. Or are they just quoting a subset of archaeologists who suspect this? You never really know with National Geographic. But the point is, it's out on your newsstands now. I can't say newsstands, can I? It's out on your computer now. They're selling it at pavilions. We don't have newsstands anymore. But my point is, National Geographic is talking about who Christ really was. Let me say at this appropriate juncture in the year that in 2 days, one aspect to this consideration is that we celebrate the life of a man of a God, of the God, who came here with the capacity to resonate with a magnetic field that certainly those who received his healings were capable of absorbing. And that I guarantee you, as a scientist, if you went in there when he cured the lepers, when he raised the dead, when he cured the blind, when he turned water into wine, I guarantee you that if you were in there as a scientist, there was something going on in there scientifically that was mighty kinky, mighty ahead of its time. And of course, then there are all the saints, Christian saints and otherwise. DNA has brought us to epigenetics. Epigenetics will bring us to the biology of the miracle. And don't let that make you think it's being reduced to the human plane. Think of it as an elevation of the human plane to the spiritual, to understand the science, or to at least begin to wrap yourself around the science of what's going on, as Claude Swanson is pointing out inherently, the science of how the DNA absorbs light. I'll tell you, if you don't get this, you're going to get buried. Each and every one of you, to each and every disease you get from this day on, increasingly over this decade, is going to be told with unanimity, with the highest institutions in the world, that your disease is genetically inspired, and outside of the drug, there's nothing you can do. Remember, to the ignorant public, there is a little play on words here. To the ignorant public, of which you are not, there's a little play on words here. And that play is that traditionally, genes mean inheritance. Inheritance is something you get, you got, and that's it. You're really smart because your father was really smart, because his father was really smart. You're really tall because your dad was really tall and his dad was really tall. So what you get, you got, and that's it. That's the play on words. And so what you're told is your mom had breast cancer because her mom had breast cancer, and now we've isolated the BRCA1 and 2 gene, and therefore that's why you have breast cancer and plan on getting it, or cut your breasts off ahead of time and be smart enough to elude the oncoming onslaught of terrible disease. You're going to be told this, and there's nothing you can do about it. Yes, Angelina Jolie. And I'm not judging her choice. That's her business. But the point is, you're going to get buried. My friends, you're going to be buried. And it's not the truth. It's only one piece of it. That's why we have epigenetics. So on your checklist, are you absorbing that you have been given the potential power to change and regulate the expression of your genes? That this is done regularly in lab experiments. Okay. Santa's checklist. Let's keep going. Go to picture 13 if you can. Picture 14 if you can. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. No show like this in America. On radio, internet, anywhere. I kid you not. Go to the website, straighttalk.cc, not .com, .cc, and that's with two T's, one word, lowercase, Straight Talk. Look at those cranial bones on 13. Your skull is not one big block of cement like the teachers told you it was, or your parents. Your head is not a block of solid cement. Where I'm from, that's what we were told. Perhaps that was the case on some levels, but these bones, the cranial bones, do separate. They have joints. I put pictures of the bones, of the individual bones, of the individual separation of those bones. Those bones vibrate. If those bones don't vibrate, your brain does not vibrate. If your brain does not vibrate, it cannot deliver intelligent commands, precisely intelligent commands, to all the different subsets of health that control you as you know you. There's another concept. It's called the cranial rhythms. Where are your cranial rhythms at? What does that mean? It means when you take a breath, you've got to be able to feel the inside of your head expand. I do. You must. Anybody that has the right to say they understand the experience of cranial flow in their body has to be able to expand their cranium with their breath, without which you're not having the experience you were designed, and that's for openers. People who clench their jaws, people who have head trauma. How many cases, how many people I have seen over the years with cancer and autoimmune disease who clench? You, if you're listening today and you have cancer or an autoimmune disease, how many years have you clenched? Especially autoimmune disease, especially cancer under the age of 50. Multiple sclerosis, 8 out of 10 MS people clench. Now, what's the hookup? Well, the hookup is that sphenoid bone in the center of your skull, it has a rate or a frequency of vibration. It has an amplitude, a wavelength, and a frequency, just like everything does. And it moves and floats and titillates and massages and flatters the pituitary and the hypothalamus, because they're embedded in it. And when you clench your jaw, and when you've had head trauma, and when you don't breathe, that hypothalamus doesn't vibrate optimally. See, that's it, optimally. Health is optimization. What you deal with in the ER room at the hospital is not about less than optimal. It's about dreadful bad. See, there's three levels. By the time you drop from okay to super bad, well, then you're in the hospital. But if you're average and below optimal, well, nobody tells you that. That's what disease manifests from. Less than optimized states. So when I say the brain, specifically the hypothalamus, doesn't vibrate, I'm saying that it's less than optimized. And if it's less than optimized, it can't control your immune system with any intelligence. You cannot move from a sympathetic to a parasympathetic pattern. What speeds you up, what sends the immune system into hyperdrive, will not slow down accordingly, because the signals to the hypothalamus and from the hypothalamus back to the immune system to sedate yourself don't occur. That's big. That's everything. To have the experience of a cranial rhythm in your body through your breath is everything. To eat intuitively is everything. To absorb gene expression is everything. To sleep with abandon is everything. To understand that your health is about changing the terrain, not finding the antimicrobial, is everything. This is on your checklist. This is on your checklist. Hopefully it's what your checklist is about. Here's something obvious that you need to stretch. Yes. You have a headache that I've even mentioned it. You need to stretch. Yes, but you see, you need to stretch past, and here's my point. You need to stretch past the belly of the muscle to the tendon. That's an experience you have to know and have. Oh, yes, I do have a video to give you. You see, you think that. You think there's a video that gives you that. No, there's a consciousness that gives you that. There's a teacher that gives you that. But this is the computer age. Soon there won't be schools. The job that most teachers do today, you will be replaced by computers. No doubt. It's too cost effective. And most teachers aren't doing anything anyway. Their hands are tied. Hey, look, you don't want to hear it? I hear it all the time. I have yet to meet a single public school teacher. And private school, honestly, it's not that much different. Something has really changed within the matrix of humandom from when you were kids to now. And we are going to a computerized form of existence. And we're being deceived into thinking that you can actually absorb knowledge from a computer. So why shouldn't you learn to stretch off a computer, off a video? And of course, my point is no. You have to understand that the stretch is an inquiry into you that evolves from the belly of the muscle to the experience of stretching the tendon, to the experience of shifting the alignment, to the experience of opening the breath, to the experience of expanding the brain, to the experience of sending the breath to the brain, to the deployment in the course of unfolding your body, to the deployment of massive amounts of opiates that saunter along to every single cell of your body, find binding sites, and change the DNA. Is it inappropriate to think that love heals? That healing is bliss? What do you think the bliss constitutes biochemically? It's the opiate. Candace Pert was on this. Pert understood this. It's why she whacked out, got obese, and died. To move from science all the way to, what's the word? Wearing the holistic crusade? To discover the opiate receptor under Solomon Schneider in 1972, and by the year 2010, she's running around in a nightgown talking about bliss, holistic health, network chiropractic, and all sorts of whacked out things when in 1972, she's a hardcore neuroscientist. What a mind. What a mind. What a diversity of talent. What a large soul. And God bless her, under the weight of that, she collapsed. But she had it as one of America's, if not one of the world's foremost neuroscientists, that there's something about this opiate that changes things. And that is what stretching your body's about. The bliss experience. Go try to learn that off a video. So you get my point. Look for authentic experience. No truth. Evolve your internal snooter to know the difference between our Lord's word and the beast. The beast is there. It comes to you in many shapes, forms, and flavors. Trust your body. Trust your body. Not the neck up. The body. The body doesn't lie. The body will tell you how to eat. The body will tell you how to stretch. The body will tell you how to move. The body will tell you how to navigate. So really what health is a navigation to bliss. No man's life demonstrated this better than the man we celebrate, the God we celebrate, on December 25th. We are in his image, correct? So I give you a perspective on this, that in his image, no truth. But reference that to the feel in your body, meaning it's 2018. In a week, it's 2018. By 2019, will you know your body in a deeper way? So let's get down to the brass tacks of it. Within this next year, will you understand the word terrain more deeply? Will you understand intuitive faculty more deeply? Will you understand sleep more deeply? Will you understand epigenetics more deeply? Will you experience your cranial rhythm more deeply? Will you experience the difference between the stretch to the belly, the stretch to the tendon, and the bliss that comes from it? Will you take a breath and feel something expand the inside of you from your marrow to the ventricles of your brain? Will you do that more deeply for 2018? 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. For the new year, if you're lost in the labyrinth of help, you've got concerns, you want the right track, the real track, 714-850-1007. Make the call. Come see me, and we'll get going. God bless you, and Merry Christmas.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.